Blog Talk Radio.
Punta ka kang magnalema, kasi alema, donalema.
Yes, sir!
Bizi bandiwe okongola, na bamuna bandiri bakufela, sala na kuwama kwako. Siniziwa mami, ukala kwa nikandeko, ati nilusa kwa mama, dona suriweka.
And welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. The month of March is already going away and going fast. We do thank you for joining us today on March 29th, 2014 on this show. We want to remind our listeners and everybody listening to us that today we're going to start something special, and it's going to be going on. We'll share with you some thoughts about that, and just encourage everybody to be part of it. But first of all, before we do that, let me just mention to all those our friends in the Atlanta area, please remember that Touch of an Angel is hosting its first, a Child's Hope First Annual Charity. Today, it's going to go on this evening. If you need any tickets or information, please call 770-318-8024. The number again for the Atlanta friends is 770-318-8024. Now, what we're going to be doing on this show, beginning now, we are going to be starting a special segment on perspectives where we'll be dealing with what we are calling Diaspora Corner. Every last Saturday of the month on perspectives, we'll be having what we call Diaspora Corner, where we bring on a leader, a Zambian in the community who talks about what they have done and what we are doing. And my good friend and partner and colleague on this forum, Matilda Lucas, is the one who's going to be handling this. I just thought that everybody should know that the last Saturday of each month, we'll be dealing with what we'll be calling Diaspora Corner. And let me hand it over to Matilda. Matilda, good morning, and over to you.
Good morning, Nathan. Thank you so much for that introduction. And While we're making announcements, I just want to reach out to our community and friends who are in California. I hope no one has been affected by the earthquake that took place not too long ago. So I hope everyone is safe there or no one has been negatively impacted by it. So coming on to the show, we have Jabez. We're talking to Jabez Mvula. He's well known in Zambia as radio host, personnel, and television host. So I'd like to bring in Jabez. Jabez, good morning.
Good morning, Matilda. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you so much for waking up so early just to be on the program. We appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Okay. So 60 minutes goes by very quickly, so we'll just jump into it and have you introduce yourself. When people say Jabez Mvula, who is Jabez Mvula? What can you tell us about yourself?
I'll try to be as brief and as modest as possible. Jabez Mvula, as you said, most people know me from my time when I worked for Zambia National Broadcasting Corporation as a radio personality and also as a TV personality. Though I do like to talk much more about my involvement with drama, I think I had a much more stronger passion for drama. During the over 15 years I worked for the NBC, I did spend much of my time in doing radio drama, TV drama, and also got involved in stage drama. I like talking about drama because even my coming to the U.S. was because of my involvement in drama. When I got so much involved in drama, so much involved in formation of the film industry in Zambia, that I decided to come and pursue studies in filmmaking in the U.S. And pretty much that's who Jarvis is. And here I the last 2 years I've also been involved as one of the community leaders in Phoenix, Arizona, where I served as the secretary for 2 years and then later served as the president of Arizona. I should be handing over to the next executive within the next 1 month or so.
Okay. That's great to know. And we will talk about leadership here throughout the show. But let me bring us back to some of the work that you did in Zambia. I know you did local news, local languages. You also have produced some film in Zambia. I was very impressed while in our discussions and also just looking, researching you on the internet, that you had worked on a television drama that you did, I think, in Zambia, Malawi, and South Africa, or maybe it's been shown in those places, and that's Bad Timing. The synopsis of that show is great, and I wish I could watch it, but I didn't find time to. Can you tell us about Bad Timing?
Bad Timing is one of the most interesting productions I've done in two different spheres, first stage and then later on film. When we did Bad Timing in Zambia, it was written by one of Zambia's best writers, Samuel Okasanka. He is one of the most prolific writers we've ever had of all times in Zambia on stage. And the play was produced by the Patrick Magoro Memorial Theatre Group. That's a group that used to do Sewero in Chinyanja on radio, as well as Zambia Radio Drama in English. That's a group I used to produce, and it was one of the best groups at that time on radio, as well as doing TV drama at that time. And when we produced Bad Timing on stage, that must have been, I think, about 2001 or two, somewhere there. We won, we came out as the best play in Zambia at the Annie Ngoma Awards. And because of that, we were nominated to go and represent Zambia in South Africa at the regional theater festival, where people enjoyed the play so much. And because of that, they also invited us to take the play to Malawi. And we also went on to present the play in Malawi for about 1 week. And during that time, I was serving as the producer for the group. It featured some of the best actors by then of that time. I remember that time some of the top actors were the late Augustine Lungu, may his soul rest in peace, the late Joma Msinjomale, may his soul rest in peace, Jacob, just to mention some of them. And it was a wonderful time. We enjoyed ourselves. It was so much fun. It was so much exposure for all of us. We also did Bad Timing on radio, just in bits of it and on TV. And then when I came to the U.S. to pursue my studies in film, I did talk to my professor by then to see if because at that time we had not done much film in Zambia. So I asked if I could do a film on Bad Timing. She at first she was reluctant, but then said, let's give it a try. And I got permission from Samuel Kasanga to see if I could change a couple of things, to change the scripts from it being a radio, TV stage into actor film. But then I was taking just 1 year of my course. So I did that, and my professor did submit the script to the Sundance. That's a a project where every year Sundance Film Festival, you know, that's where filmmakers are made. They pick out the best 100 out of people that submit scripts every year. And then when they pick those best 100, they invite some of the producers from Hollywood. They meet you, they mentor you, they look at your script, they discuss some of your ideas, they discuss some of your challenges, they discuss some of your goals, just to help you understand what it means to go into film. So there were, I think, about 800 or so, and we're like, out of the 800 submissions, we were among the top 8 that they picked. And
wow.
We had a nice time there. Yeah, it was a nice time there. It was so wonderful. We were encouraged. And because of that exposure, my producer was able to pick a group, was able to raise funds from there and sponsor about 18 people from here, from the U.S., together with me, to go to Zambia to go and shoot the film by timing.
Is this movie,
was,
is this something that we can buy or watch? Is the audience out there curious enough to say, I'd like to see that?
Unfortunately, as the title says, it turned into a by timing situation.
Cool.
We shot the film, everything. When we came back, one small thing led to a very legal complication, which for a long time I've always avoided getting into. But what happened was that my producer did come, when we came back, she gave an interview on to one of the newspapers where she said she was so happy, so excited that she was able to sponsor this film. She had to put her own personal house on loan to on mortgage, something like that, to get some money to sponsor the film, to make the film be done, which was true. But then she had left out just one small issue that funds was raised through other sponsors, including the college. And the college felt she did not give credit, and they had used taxpayers' funds, and they went... it wasn't paid, so they eventually that plus other issues they put her on the chopping board, suspended, she lost her job. It went into legal issues, and unfortunately, those legal issues made the film come to a standstill. Unfortunately,
wow.
Yeah,
it's a sticky situation when you don't name the right people. You forget, in your excitement, you forget to mention them. Let me bring your attention to the documentary you did, which is The Voice of an African Country. Was it an African nation?
The Voice of an African Child.
An African Child, that's right. I apologize for that.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
You did this documentary. Could you just shed a bit of light on that, and then we can talk about your role as leader for the association in Arizona?
You know, Voice of an African Child, I wouldn't so much get credit for that, because that documentary, it was basically meant to depict me in the... it was supposed to be the story of me, Jabez, coming from Zambia, coming to the U.S. to start the film, and going back to go and shoot the film, which could have been the first major dramatic narrative we put on the international market. And just to take you back a little bit, why that Voice of the African Nation was, and I give that all credit to my producer, Cindy Greening. There are a couple of things that would differ a lot with me, but I'll tell you what, she's one of the best producers I would work with. She is very smart. She's very pushy. She's so hardworking. But along the way, we differed in principle and in respect. So why the Voice of an African Nation and Child? We had looked at, my life was interesting. I was born and I grew up in the village, not in town. And I always try to emphasize when I tell my friends, because they always believe Africa, Zambia is too a village. Zambia is not a village. I grew up in a village. In town, life is, people are exposed, developed just like here in the U.S. It's just that the quality of life here is better than what's being in Zambia. But I grew up in the village, and the first time I ever saw electricity was when I went to a boarding school. Not that my parents were poor, but my parents were in the village, so I never had that kind of exposure in town. I never had electricity. I never watched TV. I never watched a movie until when I went to high school. And for me to have come from that very humble background, complete my school, go on to join the Zambia National Broadcasting Corporation, have a chance to be known the whole country, and move on, come to the U. When I worked for the NBC, be involved in the formation of the film industry, and move on to come to the U.S. and be able to do this script, that we're able to go back to Zambia, and all that hype. And during that period, I had a chance to have been interviewed and featured twice on the front page of the state newspaper in Arizona. That was so exciting to the producers that they just felt I had so much potential. And the Zambia, though not known, because we are very, very politically independent and politically stable, no one knows a lot about Zambia. People in the U.S. know about the country when there's war. When there's no war, nobody's going to know about that country. So that was the story about the whole film, and it was much more than by my producer Cindy looking at my life and how I was transitioning up to where we are at that time. That was the story. It was a very interesting one, and it all got entangled into it. We did talk about it about 3 years ago to see how we could get out of the legal situation. Unfortunately, the way we had approached it, again, it went back to ground zero. But I'm still hopeful that one of these days, even if we just have some copies that people can see what was done, I'll be very grateful. Because I've watched the film, I've watched the documentary. It's very interesting. It's very, very good. And it breaks my heart that people can't watch them.
Right, yeah. The piece on it on the internet is very interesting, and it's one of those things that you really wish you can get your hands on. So with your humble beginning, Jabez, as you've just described, you know, you came from a very rural part of Zambia, in the village, simple life, and probably there may have been times in your life as a young person thinking maybe this is all there is to life, but then you got out of that and you have been exposed, you've met dignitaries, you've traveled to many countries, you've made film, you've been behind the radio, director, screenwriter. Then we bring you, you find yourself here in the United States, in Arizona. So how did you find yourself as secretary in the Association of Zambians in Arizona?
Very interesting. When I just came to the U.S., I was living with a good friend of mine, Samuel Sakala. He's now gone back to Zambia, and he's a professor, I think, at the Kawe University, at the Mulungushi University. So at that time, Samuel was one of the leaders. Arizona is one of the smaller states. Not more as in size, but I mean the number of Zambians isn't that much, and most of the Zambians that are in Arizona are people that had come to the U.S. to pursue studies in mining engineering. And we always say this story. I'm digressing a little bit. We always say this about Arizona. A lot of Zambians, when they look at people that come to the U.S., they say when people go to the U.S., all they do is look after old people. With due respect, I don't see anything wrong with that. To me, what matters is you earn a dollar and you earn your living and you're happy. Arizona is one of the places where when ZCCM was under the mines, they used to pick the best students from Pelembe, from six to come to Arizona to come and study mining engineering. And when the whole system broke down, some of them were still at the university. And eventually, the system, because Zambians are very smart, very intelligent, they were absorbed by companies that took them and offered them jobs because they are very smart, very successful. And so that's the kind of crop of Zambians who are in Arizona, most of them. Very smart ones, I mean, very hardworking, and people that work in offices. And some of them bosses. I know one guy who's even a manager, a director. So Kwame Msonda and the Fred Mwale and my friend who is in Zambia, Samuel Sakala, and a few others came together and formed the association. It was much more, almost like four or five people, and the two ladies, Patricia Sakala and the, I forgot the other lady, who were always working together, mostly when there are funerals, getting people together, independent spot and stuff like that. Until about 4 years ago or so, they felt that people are not getting too very involved, and they think it wasn't very fair. They wanted to get more people involved, so they started talking to different people. And in, sometimes, as usual, Zambians, we want to do things, but we don't always want to participate, but we don't want to be involved in the forefront. We like taking the back seat. Like we always respect what Kaunda said, Tilipambuyo Pakaunda, we always want to be behind. Due respect. And that's how Kwame approached me to see if I could get involved. At the beginning, I just offered, I said, you know what, let me just take a low profile. I'll be in the background just as one of the committee members. And as we were chatting, I said, okay, I'll accept. People have invited me as one of the committee members. And eventually, as we were chatting, there were some challenges in some positions, and then the committee changed me to vice president, and I was considered because that's much more of like a law person. During the first meeting, and unfortunately, the secretary wasn't feeling too fine, and they asked me to help setting the minutes. And I said, okay, fine, it's going to be a one-time job. I took the minutes, and then after the meeting, when the next meeting came through and I gave out the minutes, they had liked my presentation, and someone moved the motion and said, you know what, we just want to make our opinion strong, and we need just to have a strong secretary. It's not just a matter of having a strong president. We need to have a very strong secretary who can basically communicate well with people and be able to present situations. And so they said, okay, why don't we do what we call the boardroom swap, where you just swap positions in the boardroom. So that's how I ended up being the secretary. And I remember Kwame and advised me that it would be interesting if we approach things from like a boardroom perspective, whereby you as the secretary, you also get more involved, especially in communicating material, let people understand what the committee is doing, let people understand the vision and the update, report, stuff like that. So it was a nice challenge, and it exposed me just to some other kind of leadership. Worked well. My president that time was Fabian Lungu. We are buddies, friends, good friends. And after about two or 3 years, Fabian decided to step down, that he had done enough, and we had elections. That's how I ended up finding myself as the president of the association. I should admit that I had come with some kind of zeal when I took over as president. I decided to go back. I didn't want to do what always people say. I'm the new president. I'll change everything. I'll do better, blah, 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 blah. I said, okay, you know what? We'll go back. I'll look at all the minutes from the beginning of when the association was formed by Fred Mwale and Kwame Mthonda until when Fabian was the president until now. I look I'll look at all the ideas that had been discussed and had not been implemented. Instead of me coming up with new ideas and then fail those ideas, why not look at those old ideas? In that case, in that way, that would be one way in which I will show that we appreciate what has done, what has been done in the past, and we're going to build on what has been done in the past, and we're going to move forward, and we will bring along with all those that were there. We will not look down upon them and say, you did not do much, but we will actually work with them. So we picked up all those ideas, and I was humbled that the ideas they had from the beginning were great, and I hope we didn't implement all of them, but we were able to document them. We did a very big document to say we'd like to do the following things, and I was humbled at how Zambians in Arizona and probably Zambians in other states in the U.S. they are so passionate about helping people back home.
Mm-hmm.
I learned one thing that the committee of Zambians in Arizona, it wasn't just about people thought about coordinating functions whenever we got functions or helping each other when one had maybe a bereavement, if you know, go and mourn together. But they constantly discussed about how can we as Zambians come together, put our heads together, possibly raise funds and be able to channel donations back to Zambia, help those people in need. Though I found all those ideas and I was so humbled. And from that time, I've always have had this feeling that I know, I may not say I'm very comfortable where I am because I still have I still have ambitions. I haven't yet achieved what I want. I don't have everything I need. But my life right now, living in the U.S., is completely different, way better off than the life of somebody back home in Zambia.
Right.
When I say I've got a problem, the level of my problem is different with the level of a problem that a person has in Zambia. And right now, Matilda, you and I will agree that if I don't have internet at home, it's a problem for me.
Right.
If my cable is down, it's a problem for me. That's not a problem for someone in Zambia. Having no internet in the house it's not a problem. Internet in the house, cable, that's a major luxury. But for you and I, it's a problem. If one of my cars breaks down, it's a big problem here because I depend on, I need to have a car, everyone has to have a car. So we don't sit down to think about others. In Zambia, when people have a problem, it means they've had no meal the whole day. They've got nothing to eat. They don't know what they'll eat the following day. They have nothing to feed their children on.
Mm-hmm.
Life in the U.S., as long as you work, I don't see you getting going hungry. You can afford to go and eat out every week. And that's the kind of thing that people are looking at among the leaders before me. That how can we make the lives of others back home better? Let's not just focus about making our lives better here because we are way better. And how can we make the lives of better?
So
that's where I got so involved in.
You have covered quite a lot in these last few minutes, and I just want to go back. And I can see how humble you are. You've transitioned very well from not talking about yourself, but looking at and identifying the needs that you'd like to work on or to solve. But first, let me bring back the spotlight on you. Your leadership style seems to speak volumes for itself. You know, you are approached by people to say, come and join us in the committee, and immediately they offer you the position of vice president, but the way things worked out, you ended up serving as secretary. What do you think in your background could have prepared you for such a leadership role? And I mean, over over some time we've gotten to know each other and we're working together on some projects, and you already stand out as a quality leader. Are there some things that you could identify in your life that could have prepared you for such? And part two of that question is, you spoke of how you had looked at the minutes from the inception of this association up to date, and you looked at what hadn't been worked on. You know, rather than the usually people would look at it as a negative way and point at the previous administration and say they didn't do this, but you looked at it as an area that was lacking and say we need to solve fill up this gap. So if you could, where did you pick that up from? And, you know, that does tie in on what prepared you for this leadership role.
That's interesting. I think a couple of things I would try to bring out. Number one, I've learned in my life that starting from life as a family, whenever you encourage each other in life, even in your house, it does make a big difference. When you tell your children all the time they're smart, they're intelligent, you are very proud of them, it makes them feel good, it makes them appreciated, it makes them work hard. And my pastor, and we always maintain this between me and my wife, we've learned at church, is between husband and wife, if you always tell you appreciate your wife, how beautiful she is, how smart she is, how you are proud of her, you encourage her to be a better person. You try by all means to look at the good side. You dwell on the good side. You make a person work hard. You appreciate how she looks in the morning when she gets dressed. You appreciate when she's walking out of the door, you're walking behind her. You appreciate how you enjoy her shaking and moving. You make her feel good. She's proud. And when my wife tells me how she's happy about the what I do, how I work hard. I mean, I'm a skinny guy, but even when I'm putting on my shirt, she says, "Oh, I just like how your mouth looks. It makes me feel so good, even though I know I've got no muscles." You know, just the idea of encouraging each other does make a big difference in life. And that's number one thing I learned, that I don't on the negative. There's one thing that I learned also from my reading, that in every situation, in anything that you do, every situation that happens in your life, bad or good, it can either make you better or bitter, depending on how you choose to take it. So if you want to dwell on the negative, it's going to make you bitter. If you want to dwell on the positive, it's going to make you better. The fact is, every person makes mistakes in life, including me. I make mistakes. Even yesterday, I made mistakes. I might make mistakes today. So if people will always dwell on my mistakes, it's going to hurt my feelings. And right. The same way, if people can look at my positive, it's going to also have the right to look at other positive. That's number one. Number two, I'm one person who is very conscious about the things I do. So one thing I always do is that when I want to make decisions that involve other people, if they involve me, it's okay. I don't care. I can do anything. But if I make decisions that involve other people, I want to make sure that every decision I make is at least close to being correct. I'm mindful about the effect on other people. So I always try to always read a little bit and look at what other situations have been handled in the past. And it does help a lot when you do that, especially as a leader. You don't just want to speak from without. Don't just argue from without. If people present a situation to you and you are not sure, I always say, let me just consult and I'll get back to you. So that, by doing that, it did help me a lot. It did help me to make sure that I keep myself abreast about what others have done, and also get in touch with others, see what other people are doing. that did position me well. It did help me. And finally, the last thing that also helped me is because of my background as a writer, I write a lot. I always write a lot. You don't want to open my bag and see the things that I write about. I write about everything. My bag is always full of small papers that I write ideas and stuff like that. So whenever I learn ideas from people or I saw from the minute, I wrote them down and documented them. In life, Matilda, if you try by all means, because every day you come up with ideas, and the ideas that you come up with today may not necessarily work today, but if you just write them down and in a book and plot the book, 5 years down the line, you may find that an opportunity comes whereby an idea you had 3-4 years ago may work in that situation. And if you wrote it down, you can go back and look at it, and it's going to help you. And I think that's what helped me, because I did document all those thoughts that people had from the minutes, everything, wrote them down on a piece of paper and say, where can we start from? What can we do? I mean, I want to say one thing here. We did not achieve everything. There were a lot of good ideas. We didn't actually achieve everything, possibly because we were overstretching ourselves. We wanted to do this. But at least one thing I'm proud of is that I did document where we came from, where we are going. But whoever comes in after me, they can still look at those. If they have the time, they can look at those and basically see how they can build on them. And that can make a difference. And just to add on, one thing that I'd love to mention is that I've used those things that we did not achieve as a group. I may still pursue them as an individual, even as I step down from being the president of Arizona. Like one thing I did was, here in the U.S., when people go to the library, there is everything that you can find in the library. I mean, starting from books, computers, internet, everything. In Zambia, when you go to a library, it's just books, and some of them are very odd books. The culture of reading in Zambia is not that good. I'm one of those. I'm bad at reading, unless something interests me, unless something is going to maybe add value to my ideas. So I always talk to my colleagues at work how I wish I would just make a difference in people's lives with their education. To me, education makes a big difference, because
it does.
If, as I said, I was born in the village, I grew up in the village, I never knew electricity. If I never went to school, I wouldn't be where I am right now, being in the U.S. I could have still been a villager. I know some of the guys I used to play with, they are villagers. But because my late dad, may he so rest in peace, he was a teacher, and he always pushed me so hard. It did help me to work so hard, go to school, and be where I am. So I really, one of those things that I taken over, that even if we didn't achieve much in the area of education, I would still want to continue, you know, as an individual, as a person, to see how
absolutely
I can help them.
And not to cut you short, I just want to remind the listeners out there, those who have called in and those who are listening in on online, that you are listening to a special presentation on perspective, and this is called Diaspora Corner, a feature that we'll be having every month, the last Saturday of every month, and I would like to just feature more of our Zambian leaders and find out who they are and how they're making an impact in their own communities and in Zambia as a whole. Those who would like to ask questions, we'll start taking questions now. Press 1 on your phone and you'll be put in the host queue so we can ask questions. And I see that we already have a question here. I will go ahead and say, I will invite Nathan to speak. But I just want to say, you know, education is key. we did spend a lot of time on Blog Talk Radio, almost a month, talking about education, and you cannot emphasize that enough. Nathan, go ahead with your question.
Thanks, Matilda Jaffes. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Let me also say that your story is very inspiring, and I think sends a message to people listening out there that it doesn't matter what your background, where you come from, you can still do something with your life. My question is, you are passionate about radio and TV drama. One question, but it's twofold. In what way are you engaged with the same, with people doing the same thing in Zambia? One, two, how much have you done in terms of where you have come from? You, in terms of rural Zambia, and particularly your village, to go back and inspire somebody from there to, you know, to do better than to do better for their lives. Thanks.
That's a very interesting question. Let me start with the last one, because the last one is easy for me to answer. What have I done to inspire people in where I've come from, rural Zambia? Right now, nothing. However, here's one thing that I'm doing that I'm so proud to share with. In my discussions with my colleagues at work, I did tell them my passion about how I wish I could make people in Zambia just different. And at one time, my employers, Alaska Airlines, had just bought brand new computers, and the old computers weren't even bad, very good. And so they decided to give all the computers to the employees so they can take them home. And I wrote my manager, I said, there are kids in Zambia that I wish I could get some computers and give to them. It would make a big difference to them. They would appreciate these computers more than the employees. Don't get me wrong, it's just my thought. And my employers, I thank them so much. They were so good, and they gave me 12 computers. So what I'm doing right now is my mom and my young sister, they are discussing with the chief. We spoke to the chief where I come from, and the chief has brought together, we've agreed that we bring together the school, people from the school, people from the leadership from the church, Minister of Education, and the different people. So they've secured one place at the school where we'll go and put those computers and open a library. I just want, not in town, but people in the village, kids that would never, ever have a chance of using a computer. They can go and learn computers, play games. It means just playing games, but just a chance that the kids can use computers may make a big difference. And the other aspect that we've also discussed, which has been a passion of me, is that when I take my kids, or when you and I go to the hospital here, you've got a TV, you've got everything. The hospital is just as good as home, very comfortable. When a child goes to the hospital in Zambia, it's a hospital. I mean, it's a hospital. And so we've we're just securing a very small project where we'd want the library, where we will be every week, maybe Friday or weekend. They can go in the world and just show videos. All I want is just to make the lives of these people happy. A blend here, there's what they call Make a Wish Foundation. If a child is very ill, they can give them a wish to say, let their pain be less by just making them happy. So I'm trying to pursue those, and then my parents, and I was with the chief, with someone who's writing the whole document. Once everything, I've got the computers already in my house. What I'm just dealing with him is to see how I can clear them with customs, send them to Zambia, and that's one thing that I want to pursue back home. Second part of the question, which was the first one, what we're doing in film. Right now, working on a project, and I'll try by means not to talk much about this because publicity part hasn't yet come ready. But I'm working on a project to do films here in the U.S. And all the films I'll be doing here in the U.S., they'll be featuring at least one or two Zambian actors. I hope that can help one to tap into the market here, at the same time tap into the market home, and I hope that can help encourage, I can bring in one actor once in a while to come and feature on the film. And we hope we can help to build and take this to festivals and expose them as much as we can.
Okay. Great. I'll go on to the next caller. We have 913 ending in 2282. I believe this is our friend Zebron in Kansas. Zebron, good morning.
Good morning, Matilda. Thank you so much for having me. Good morning, Mr. Jabez Mvula.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you, sir? My question is, I know you're a leader. You know, I even followed your computer thing when you posted it on Facebook, and I was very impressed about it. My question for you is that I know we have a few Zambians in public office who have who are not really leaders. You know, like Dora Sidia, she became an MP, rose to the ministerial position easily because she had a name recognition. She was always on TV reading news and stuff like that. But when I look at you, I look at a leader and, a genuine person who's honest and says the truth. My question is, would you consider at any time in your life that you'd go back to Zambia and probably, run for a public office, like a member of parliament or something like that, in your village or, just somewhere in your area? And if it's yes, I'll be much available to be your campaign manager. Make sure you win. But yeah, would you really consider just run for public office and just go back and serve your community?
I am humbled by that. At one time, I did think about that. Right now, I don't think about it. And I'm very brief to say why. The reason is I'm one of those very weird people that I don't take myself to be different from everybody else. I'm a human being, and I can be a human being. And a lot of people, when they get power, especially African power, compromises them. And I'm just a bit scared to get compromised. Not that I want to point fingers at others and say they are bad. Not all of them are bad. Some of them are really good. But what I'm positioning myself now is I'd love to be one person that can work so hard, be successful, and just be able to support others. One thing I've learned in the U.S. is that unlike in Zambia, when people here are rich, they tend to focus so much on making other people's lives better. If you can push others, that changes your life as well. So that point, I don't think I would want to go into politics now. Maybe, I don't know. I had that view at one time. I had that idea. But I'm a bit disappointed. In Zambia, if you speak your mind, they'll try by all means, the leaders that be to bring you down, to finish you. And in the end, it's either just like look at Lakin Musa. I always followed his political career. He seems to be a very smart guy. Look at the way they finished him. Look at the guy who was the former minister of commerce. What's his name in the MMD government?
Mutati.
I have respect for Mutati. When Mutati wanted to aspire to be the president, look at the way they finished him.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the kind of life I want to lead. That if you and I agree, then we start finishing each other. No, I like the politics here. You can fight each other, but you don't finish each other. So that does discourage me. And I'm proud to be a Zambian. I will always shout, "Viva Zambia!" But that aspect of leadership, I have a problem with it, and I don't want to go into those waters.
So, Jabez, you do bring a very interesting point on that aspect. I'm reflecting on a conversation I had with another colleague where we said, a lot of things were set precedents for us, and we have continued on without changing anything about it. Over time, politics have become very negative. Or even just working with other leaders on a small scale, it can be very negative. There's a tendency to bring each other down. But when we have people like you, we have other quality leaders, what if we
do a mentorship program where we mentor the young people, we mentor the youth, change their mindset. You know, we learn, those of us who've had the privilege of pursuing higher education and taking leadership classes, those things are taught. But a lot of times people may have a drive and can be mistaken for being a leader. As Zebron pointed out, I'm not referring to the same person, but just generally speaking. You know, you'd have someone who would speak loud enough and people would tend to look at them as a leader, but they don't necessarily have the leadership skills. But with proper mentoring, it can be done. So this Jabez, you know, there's the initiative that we are forming as leaders in the diaspora and community. Is that is this something that you would like to champion and talk about more, so we can have that, we can change the future leaders, so we don't tear each other up down when in public office?
Yeah,
what are your reactions?
I mean, go ahead, Jabez. I'm sorry.
Okay, I like that. First, I never thought of mentoring somebody, but I think that's a good idea. It never crossed my mind, and I always learned. And after the show, I'll write that down as one thing that I may pursue in future. Like I said, I always write my ideas. They help me, and thanks for that idea. Now, leaders in the diaspora, I've had a chance to be involved with other leaders in the diaspora. Thanks to your leadership as the current interim chair. I've seen the passion, the zeal of the leaders, and I'm humbled. And frankly speaking, there are a lot of leaders that I feel they are way better than I am, and I'm learning from them. I'm so humbled. I'm so humbled by a lot of guys in the group. They've got the passion, they've got the zeal. And I feel if we can come together, we can achieve a lot. We still have teething problems, and I hope we can get over these teething problems as quickly as we can, getting to know each other. There's one person, a friend of mine, may he so rest in peace, his name was Matthias Lungu. We used to go to church together in Zambia, and we were leaders together. By then, I was the president of I was the chairman of the youth group, of the regional youth group in the Reformed Church in Zambia, and he was a secretary. We were very close friends, and we had sometimes different approaches to things. I remember one time we sat in a meeting. We argued, we debated an issue. We had very strong positions, and we almost made the committee get divided because there are others who are supporting me, others supporting Matthias. We debated so strongly, very passionately. But the most important thing was that we are dealing with a church issue. Each one of us, whenever they were debating, we had to quote the Bible and why we had to take that one particular road. And at the end of the day, we voted and we agreed. One thing I always talk about that episode was that after the meeting, Matthias invited me to his house for lunch. After all that debating, and we were so emotional, the two of us walked out of the meeting, got to his house, and had lunch. And we were joking, and everything that happened in the meeting ended. And I just wish as leaders would have that kind of approach. That one, when you are discussing issues, you look at the facts on the table. Number two, we may differ, but at the end of the day, once you take a vote and say, let's do this, I don't care that my point was defeated. It's a collective responsibility to pursue it further. And I think that's one thing that's missing a lot in Zambia. There's so much personalities, and I hope, being a Zambian, we will not bring that kind of aspect into modern leadership. If we can take the kind of modern leadership and be much more objective, look at the people that we are serving. It's not about me. It's about the people. What do they want? It's about us collectively as a group and what do we want to achieve. And then we go back to consult people. We share that information with people. I believe we can achieve much more. This group can achieve much more. And I like the ideas. We can do a lot.
Okay. Well, we're quickly coming to a close. I was hoping to have heard from Roger, Dr. Patrick, or even Clotilda, but we have about 5 minutes before the program ends. Jabez, you are the outgoing president for the Association of Zambians in Arizona. What advice do you have for the incoming president and committee? 2 minutes, what advice would you give them?
When we come to the U.S., we leave Zambia, we come here. People work so hard, and people are always busy. It's difficult for people to give you their time and give you their support and be there when you need them. However, when they have good problems, they need you. You have to be there for them. That's the way it works, and it will always work like that. You may not get all the support when you want it, but somehow you can get it. One thing I always did as the leader here was if we had anything that we were doing and I needed support from people, I'd basically pick up the phone, call individuals, explain to them what we want to do. And then once I explained to them, that's how craft I was always. I explained to them and I would say, okay, the secretary or someone who write a letter or who write an email, send an email, please support this initiative. So I would always talk to people and explain because it does make a difference. People take for granted that whatever we send in the short email, short announcements, people can understand them all the time. It's not always easy. Even people take for granted that whatever we discuss in meetings as leaders, we can exhaust everything. No. We always kept interacting with people, make phone calls. I knew which people can support us and which people may not support us. And that, I hope the incoming group can pick it up from there. Always try to search for support from people. Let people understand what you want to do. Don't take it for granted that people understand you. They may not. You may go back to them and let them and explain what you want to do. And if people disagree with you, take time to listen. My dad told me that when I'm talking to you, you've got 2 ears and 1 mouth, which means listen more, talk less. It's always important. Mm.
Wisdom right there, profound words. Thank you so much, Jabez, for joining us on this special feature on Diaspora Corner, segment that will be hosted once a month on perspectives. Dr. Patrick and Roger and Clotilde, I've opened your mics. I hope you found this interview refreshing, and if you have a quick comment to make, you can go ahead. But I just want to say thank you so much, Jabez, for coming on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
I join you in thanking the well-received, and I respect greatly the speaker. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Roger and Clotilde, I'm not sure if you had wanted to say anything before we end the program. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Until next time when we feature another one of our leaders in the diaspora, this has been Matilda Mwavalukas, your host, sitting in today with Nathan, co-hosting with Nathan. Nathan, your closing remarks?
Yes, it was good to have Jabez. He's done a great job. We're looking forward to doing more of this as a way of getting to know each other in the diaspora. And next week we'll be speaking to the international guest speakers for the Fresh Aroma Prophetic Conference.
Go ahead. Next week we'll be speaking
Thank you.
To
you. No, I'm saying we'll be speaking to the Spring Prophetic Conference guest speakers, Dr. Mumba, the lady from Zimbabwe and Uganda. Thank you, everybody, and have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Victoria Mpenge. Hasi Bonanga. Neil Eggers.